that tomorrow is the appearance day of Lord Varahadev. But in the Vaishnava circles, we do the fasting for that day one day before. And the reason is that today is Ekadasi, and according to our Vaishnava theology, on Ekadasi we minimize the intake of food very much. It's a day when we actually, believe it or not, we don't eat Gauranga potatoes and have a feast, a Ekadasi feast. The idea is, if you can take nothing, if you can't do that, then you may take water. If you cannot do that, then you can take some fruits. And if you cannot do that, then you can add vegetables. And if you cannot do that, you can add cheese to this, and then you have Gauranga potatoes. And if you cannot, if that is not enough, you could add nuts and have the Hare Krishna model of at the end. The reason why we do this is not to inflict pain and suffering on our body and psyche. But the reason is we try to move away from the material elements and totally concentrate on the spiritual life. This is the idea. And if you do that, then you would have to break the fast at a certain time the next day. But because then is Varahadev's appearance, usually you have to fast for Varahadev. Since you have broken the Ekadasi day, the clever pandits have said, we fast for Varahadev, but we put that fast on the Ekadasi day. Am I clear? That's the idea behind this. I thought, at least for those who, it's nice for you to know the reason why we do things. This will be a very important point in my lecture series about the hidden secret of bhakti. It said you have to do things consciously. So I'm already starting now. That's why the Bhagavad-gita. So I thought, since we are anyways fasting already for Varahadev, we might as well talk today about Varahadev instead of tomorrow. And I wanted to give a lecture on Varahadev, who he is and what he does. So, but I must say, the room transforms every day a little bit more. The Dharma, did you notice this? When I first came, there were no branches, and there was no Jai Sri Radhe. Now there's everywhere branches of Jai Sri Radhe. Let's see what else comes. Maybe soon we'll have a river going through. A moon will flow.
Hare Rama.
Śrīla Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaja, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Anand Koti Vaishnavrinda ki Iskon Founder Acharya Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Nama Acharya Śrīla Haridasāka ki Prīmsa Kaho Sī Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityānanda Śrī Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai O Vrindavan Mathura Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Gangamai Yamunamai Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Tulasi Devi Ki Jai Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Prema All glories to the Assembly of Nations. 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 All glories to the Assembly of I just asked one devotee how he is, and he said, a little tired. I want to say something. We will have quite a long festival, and I request you, I mean, it's very good to be there for the program, but outside the program we have ample pauses so that you can go and take care of yourself so that you are well rested and during the program is not tired. I'm following this very strictly, this advice. It's part of the wisdom of the tree of life that in order to live a life which is supported for spiritual practice, we need to balance the areas of our life, physical, emotional, social, and of course spiritual. We need to balance that, keep that in harmony in some way. So I feel especially the hidden secrets of Bhakti, which starts this evening, is a subject which might revolutionize your whole spiritual life if you like to live on the basis of spiritual understanding. If you just live like whatever comes, then this won't make a change. But if you see, okay, this makes sense, or like this, like Hari Prasad will say, I got it, you know, I got it, isn't it? We say like this in New York, and then you might. Experience a new awakening in your spiritual life. Oh, there's a second parrot. There was only one parrot. What happens when the Vrindavan is infiltrating our second parrot? Maybe. So good. Fine, so. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate.
Rakshitita Lodadanaya Vipra.
Yadro Yadrakshitita Lodadanaya Vipra.
Drodim.
Drodim.
Tanum.
Tanum.
Sakalayakya.
Sakalayakya.
Mahim.
Mahim.
Anantaha.
Anantaha.
Assumed the form of a boar as a pastime, just to lift the planet Earth, which was drowned in the great ocean of the universe, called the Garbhodaka. The first demon, Hiranyaksha, appeared, and the Lord pierced him with his tusk. Here on Yaksha is a very special name. Aksha means eyes, and Hiran means gold. So he has gold in his vision. He's greedy for money, in other words, or greedy for gold. It's that demon who represents a certain demon who is around our own heart, which is greed. Are you sometimes greedy?
Yes.
I think we could precise that. That demon, or that psychological inclination, you could say in modern terms, jumps at us. So it's about this pastime where the Lord confronts him and liberates him. The Lord Brahma said, I will repeat this for you. When the unlimitedly powerful Lord assumed the form of a boar as his pastime, just to lift the earth, which was drowned in the great ocean of the universe called the Garbhodaka, the first demon, Hiranyaksha, appeared, and the Lord pierced him with his tusk. Since the beginning of creation, the demons and the demigods, or the Vaishnavas, are all with the two classes of living beings to dominate the planets of the universes. Lord Brahma is the first demigod, and Hiranyaksha is the first demon in this universe. Only under certain conditions do the planets float as weightless balls in the air. And as soon as these conditions are disturbed, the planets may fall down in the Garbhodaka ocean, which covers half the universe. The other half is the spherical dome within which the innumerable planetary systems exist. The floating of the planets in the weightless air is due to the inner constitution of the globes and the modernized drilling of the earth to exploit oil from within is a sort of disturbance by the modern demons and can result in a greatly harmful reaction to the floating condition of the earth. Listen to this. Maybe we find some geology in the Bhagavata. Prabhupada mentions that our planet floats in outer space because of a certain inner constitution. The oil which is there, and if the oil is continues to be sucked out of the earth by the modern drilling, then that might result in the position of the earth in the whole universe, and it might change. Come either a little bit too close to the sun or move away from the sun. A similar disturbance was created formerly by the demons headed by Hiranyaksha. Our Prabhupada gives a translation for him, the great exploiter of the gold rush. And the earth was detached from its weightless condition and fell down into the Garbhodaka ocean. It already happened once, Prabhupada says. The Lord, as maintainer of the whole creation of the material world, therefore assumed the gigantic form of a Wildeber with a proportionate snout and picked up the earth from within the water of the Garbhodaka. Srila Jayadeva Goswami, the great Vaishnava poet, sings as follows. No, please sing along. Vasati dashana shikare dadanita valagna shashini kalanka kaleva nimagna Keshavadrita Shukala Rupa Jayagadishare O Keshava, O Supreme Lord, who have assumed the form of a boar, O Lord, the planet Earth rested on your tusks, and it appeared like the moon engraved with spots. Such is the symptom of an incarnation of the Lord. The incarnation of the Lord is not the concocted idea of fanciful men who create an incarnation out of imagination. The incarnation of the Lord appears under certain extraordinary circumstances like the above-mentioned occasion. And the incarnation performs a task which is not even imaginable by the tiny brain of mankind. The modern creators of the many cheap incarnations may take note of the factual incarnation of God as the gigantic boar with a suitable snout to carry the earth. When the Lord appeared to pick up the earth, the demon of the name, what was his name again?
Hiranyaksha.
Yes. Tried to create a disturbance in the methodical functions of the Lord, and therefore he was killed by being pierced by the Lord's tusk. According to... Oh, now we find an information of exactly how the fight went on. Some further insights of how Varaha confronted No, yeah, Varaha pointed this greed in the eyes, Mr. Greed in the eyes. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the demon of Hiranyaksha was killed first by the hand of the Lord. Therefore, his version is that after being killed by the hand of the Lord, the demon was then pierced by the tusk. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms this version. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vishnaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Dhinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prasadine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Ashtatya Vishyatavine The first demon, Hiranyaksha, appeared, and the Lord pierced him with his tusk. This is taken from the seventh chapter of the second canto, which is called, or which deals with scheduled incarnations. It means incarnations which come according to their time on the universal timetable for incarnations, scheduled incarnations with specific functions. The incarnation assume different forms for very specific purposes. And the Lord here takes the beautiful form of a boar in order to save the planet Earth, which had been thrown out of its natural position and was now in the Garbhodaka Ocean and in the bottom. Now, because wild boars have the very specific physical construction to lift something which is in the earth, really, they have an appropriate detector, that's a nostril, they have a very fine sense of smelling, they can find everything. And then they have a snout which comes forward like this, and they have on the snout some, you know, it's like toothpicks. You can pick everything with it, the tusks. And it was possible, therefore, to save them. This form, in other words, has I will surprise you, at least two functions. One is the function just mentioned, to take the planet Earth, which has really sunk into the bottom of that Garbhodaka Ocean, into the mud, really, to take it out. And the second function, because the Lord could have taken other forms as well, is explained in the Matsya Purana. It is in a way challenging our concepts of Krishna. See, when we are thinking of a shukha is a boar, we shake in disgust. We don't want to come close. I remember when I was in Vrindavan this year, we have one driverji, his name is Mahesh. He is a real fast driver. He's famous as the racing bridge Parsi. I was asking him, why do I see so many pigs? The pig population is increasing in Vrindavan. And I thought something, it's not important, but it was not that reason. And he said he didn't know. And then I asked him, how do you call this animal? And he said, shukha. Sugar is sweet, but this is not sweet. No. And he laughed. And then we almost had to stop. He laughed so hard. Not sugar. One devotee has in the email sugar. Not sugar. Shukha. Shukha means the wild boar. Pig. So. And then he explained, this is a very dirty animal because it eats the stool, and then its body becomes so fat because there's some fat in the stool. I'm sorry, Shanagata, I know it's early in the morning and don't want to hear before breakfast such things. And there's this fat inside, and that makes you very fat when you eat it. In case you didn't know. So that's why they are so fat, because they... Anyways, let's stop this. And usually, therefore, because and this animal is fed because of eating this, it's untouchable. You don't even look in the direction of this animal, and you don't speak about this animal, at least not before the Brahman Sharangataku. It's so dirty that even to think about it makes you, ugh.
My stomach.
But when Lord Krishna, listen to this, takes on this form, he is wonderful. When the boar appeared from the nostril of Lord Brahma, he came out of the nostril of Lord Brahma. Listen to this. He breathed out Brahma, and then a small little something came out and expanded. And when it was big enough, very, very big, it made the sound. Whoa! And everyone went, yoo-hoo! Then it shook its vast body. Now, when a normal pig shakes his body, it means run, because you don't want to become dirty. But the saints who saw this went like, in order to be bathed by the water which was coming from Lord Varaha as he roared to announce his victory over the demons and shook himself. It was like when the pujari, after he has offered the water to the Lord, the water is pure, when he turns around and throws it over the congregation of worshippers, everyone goes like, you should see in Vrindavan, in Vashana, the morning aarti, after the morning aarti, the pujari goes and has water, and he sprinkles almost like a small bucket like this over the worshippers, and they all rush forward. And if you don't have good rib bones, don't be in the crowd because you will be crushed. Everyone is so eager to get that water. So this shows us that anything in contact with the Lord is very pure. So that form of the shuka, which usually everyone goes on, you know, that form of a boar was so auspicious that the saints bathed in the water falling from his hairs. And some of the hairs fell out. Now when our hair falls out and we find the hair everywhere, we become discouraged. But when the hair of the Lord fell, just listen to this, the hair fell on the earth and it sprouted and into beautiful kusha grass. And this kusha grass is used by the most purest of Brahmins to sit upon when they do their worship or their chanting. I have a kusha grass mat and I'm sitting on it with profit in the Gauranga Mandir. Yes. Very pure. So the Lord, I always feel the appearance of Lord Varaha announces for us in resonating tones, don't measure the Lord with your material concepts. According to material concepts, a shukar, you know, a wild boar, is to be avoided by all means. It's so dirty. It eats, its eating habits, everything is low, 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 low. But when the Lord takes even such a form, it's beautiful. It's praised in the morning class before breakfast, without any problem, because the Lord is beautiful and wonderful in whatever He does. Never, never make a mistake to measure the Lord and His deeds with material concepts. You are wrong if you do this. You cannot compare God with anything of this world. He was before anything. So, that Lord then roared, and when the Hiranyaksha, who had disturbed the earth and had pushed it down into the mud of the universe, heard this, he whirled around and he saw the Lord Varaha coming at him with a mace. And they fought. The Lord was enjoying it very much and joyfully enjoyed it. And finally, he took his hand and just hit him and he fell down. And then he killed him afterwards by piercing his heart. Now, when devotees hear this, who measure the Lord with a material concept, they think, oh, again, killing this, we know, he did that. The Krishna book, I know what it is. There's a demon, ping, 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 and he's dead. That's your religious Bible. This is a mundane concept. There is a verse, it's called Mudheta Sadhu Api Rikshita Sarpahatya. It's in the 7th canto. It says, even saintly persons take pleasure in the killing of a scorpion or a snake. So the devotees take pleasure when they hear that the Lord is killing the demons, because the devotees know, I mean, if they are a little introspective and like to find out what is it about the Lord, they know this killing is not to be measured with mundane qualities. It's not Bruce Lee killing or the dragon, crouching tiger, flying dragon or whatever. It is not a kung fu film from the cheap film industry of China. It's something totally different. It is very, very spiritual. And how it is, you have to find out. You have to have become interested in the Lord and his activities and the details, how he does it, so that you can find out how he's wonderful even in his acts of killing demons. You cannot measure it with a material conflict. Oh, it's like in a Kung Fu film. So the Lord went, and his specific purpose was what?
To rescue the planet Earth.
To rescue the planet Earth. How nicely you have said it. To rescue the planet Earth, yes, by uplifting it. I like this pastime very much because I certainly am also like a fallen planet. I also need the uplifting Shakti of the Lord. And the Sanskrit for uplifting here is interesting. Udharanaya. Udharan. One of the different names of the Lord is Patita Udharana, which means he uplifts the fallen people. By his Devam Prakriti, by his it said that those who are approaching the Lord do what is called Devam Prakritim Ashrita. They place their life under the shelter of the divine energy. That is the difference between a materialist and a devotee. That's the difference between an enlivened devotee and a not so enlivened devotee. The devotee places his life under the shelter of the divine energy. And once a devotee does this, the Lord becomes Patita Udharani for him. He uplifts, he protects first, and then uplifts the devotee by his higher strength. See, in this world, you can say that there are two energies, and you have a choice which one of the energies you place yourself under. Under which shelter do you move? There is what is called the Purushakara energy and the Daiva. Purushakara and the Daiva. Purushakara means what a human being can do. It's the strength which comes from your own intelligence and your own resources, financial, physical, what you have, Purushakara. And then there is the Daiva strength. It's a strength which comes from the Lord. Now, all of us have a certain strength and a certain intelligence and a certain amount of money. I noticed Hari Prasad must be rich because you're from New York. You were flying from in an international flight here. So that is his own strength. Maybe it's the strength of your money, of your mother also, given has helped to come. That Purushakara, our own strengths, our money strengths, our intelligence strengths. Some of us go to fitness studios. Our bodily strengths. This is called Purushakara. But there is another strength, which is called Deva, the divine strength of the Lord. Purushakara strength is always limited. Deva is unlimited, because it comes from an unlimited source of strength. It comes from the Lord. So to rely on the strength of the Lord is more successful. There is this ancient story of Prahlad Maharaj, who totally made himself dependent on Daiva, on the Lord. Remember when Hiranyakashipu, his father, who was the exact opposite. He was working with his own strength and he had a lot. He was a mystical demon. Ooh, too much. He was the older brother, I believe, of Hiranyaksha. Something. When he began to attack Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu began to attack Prahlad Maharaj, it was the beginning of his end. In the Bhagavatam it says, Hiranyakashipu is very strong on his own, he has extraordinary strength. He was so strong that in fact he ruled the whole universe, and even the devatas bowed down before him and became his slaves. He was extraordinary strong. He conquered all the directions. But when he began to attack his little helpless child, Prahlad, the Bhagavatam said, that's the beginning of the end. And when he will try to kill Prahlad, then he will die. It came to that family drama where the father attacked with a sword, a blank sword, his son to kill him. And Prahlad was dependent on Krishna. He was so dependent that he felt so protected that he felt, my father must be joking with me. But it was not a joke. It was the versus type of parental abuse of the power. He wanted to kill his father. So then he asked him, how are you so strong? I have tried to kill you many times and you have always not been, I was not able to kill you. And Prahlad said, I'm so strong by daiva strength. I get my strength from the Lord. And Father, believe it or not, you also get it from there, because there is only one. So the demon said, nonsense! I'm strong on my own! And I will now kill your so-called Lord. You will see. First, I will kill you, and then I will kill the Lord. A confrontation was there between Deva and Purushakara. You can say there was a confrontation of the devotee and the demon, and that's right. But we are now talking about strengths, about ways to conduct our lives. And that was between the deva, someone who had taken shelter under the divine energy, and someone who had taken shelter in the material energy and was relying on his own strength, Purushakara. And how it ended. The devotee who was protected was victorious. Prabhupada made once a very interesting statement. It was a political statement about the Soviet Empire. When Prabhupada heard that the KGB agents of that Soviet Empire had hurt the devotees, by imprisoning them. And you can ask the devotees, we have some devotees from the previous Soviet Empire. They were even torturing the devotees in psychological clinics, by injecting some psychological chemistry into them to test the effect of these chemistry on them. They gave them nerve gas and so on. When Prabhupada heard this, he said, now the Soviet Empire is finished. It will fall. Because of the same confrontation, there are devotees who take shelter in Krishna, and there are materialists who take shelter not in Krishna, but in their own strength. Prabhupada raised a question. This is important. I will prepare you. I will put a difficult question before you in about 10 minutes, which will make you shudder, this question which I will ask you. But I will prepare you for this question now. Have you heard about the struggle for the Juhu land? There was this Mr. Naira. He was very highly placed in the local government of Juhu, and he sold. He had this method of cheating, of making money. He sold a beautiful place of land near the ocean, the Arabic Ocean, and then he placed some condition on the land. If by so and so, by such and such date, you have not constructed a temple there, then the land goes back to the owner, original owner, that is to me. So then he sold this land to the devotees, and the devotees detected this clause: you have to build a temple in so and so many months. Later, it was, he didn't tell the devotees, it was their hidden in some thing. And then the devotees couldn't raise the money. And then he wanted to take the land back. So when the devotees found that out, they immediately, overnight, with a friend, built a temporary temple to be legally now the owner of the land. So when Mr. Nair found out that his trick didn't work on the Hare Krishna devotees, he got gundas, you know what is gundas? Mafia, mafiosos. And he went with these gundas on the land to destroy the temple. And because he was the sheriff, that's the title which he had, he had porters begging his gundas. Wow, this was a war. And he was actually able to destroy the temple. Because the porters was protecting the porters. In India, porters can be bribed. You give a lot of money, then they are on your side. No problem. There's corruption, no problem. So they, and they, now something for the Belgian emotions. They grab one Mataji at her hair. Mataji, and pulled her by the hair when she wanted to protect the deities. Yes, real demon. And the next day, he died. Now, Prabhupada raised the question. Why were we successful, but not, and the land went to us, and not Mr. Nair? Why? And then he said, he had money. He had influence. He was a sheriff. He had a newspaper called Free Press Journal. And still, he failed. And he even died. Why? Then he said, Mr. Nair was working on his own account for himself. But we were working for Krishna. My dear devotees, on what side are you? Are you working for Krishna already? Or are you still trying to situate yourself in the danger and in the waves of material existence? I know this is a very difficult question, and one person I can see already the trauma rising in his heart when he hears the question. But engage your intelligence with this question for a moment. There, we will address all the other points which also need to be addressed in a moment. It's a balanced presentation, I promise you. I just want to ask you now a question. Stay with the question. Are you working under the shelter of Krishna, or are you making your own arrangements? This is a simple question. Answer this question. Stay with this question. Two strengths, two types of living entities. One, making himself dependent on the strengths of God. The other living entity makes himself dependent on his own arrangements, his plans. Since time immemorial, these two are there in this universe. One is called the Suras, and the other is called the Asuras. Now, obviously, there are a lot of gray zones between this. I don't think it's that simple to divide humanity in two categories. But also gray zones, you know, they derive their shadows of great by how near they are to the light or by how near they are to the black, you know. So where do you place yourself? Here's the purest of the pure, here's the darkest of the dark. They derive their distinguishing qualities by the way they make themselves dependent on strengths. This side makes himself dependent on his own strengths. That side makes himself or herself dependent on Krishna's strengths. And now there are many shades between them, many gray zones, many, and here it gets a little difficult because often it's not the either or, it's both, or a little here, a little from that. But if you want to increase your light in your life, you need to make a plan how you make yourself dependent on Krishna. Now, for those who are traumatized, who said that this is the old preaching, I should surrender totally to Krishna and look what came out of me. I'm not saying you should not work with the intelligence that God has given you, with the body, with the talents, because they are God-given. You should also, obviously, you should not ask the Lord for things you need to do in your life. And you should know when it's time to surrender, you should learn, and when it's time to make. It's not a question of not surrendering. When it's time to make your own arrangements, for instance, for a grihastha, we need to know how we can earn our living for our house, our children, who will eat a lot during their life, and so on. But we can't expect that. Okay, I pray to Gonitai and they shall give me the bread. No, the Gonitai has given you something else, your brain and your strength, which must be utilized to use what the Lord has given you. But we are now speaking about, because it's so subtle, I feel sometimes that we don't think deep enough in Krishna consciousness, and it gives me a heart pain. The subtle thing which I want to express is walk towards the light in your life. how you manage your life. You need to manage your life, but you need to walk towards the light. You need to walk towards that side in your life where you make yourselves dependent on Krishna. Then you can be uplifted by Krishna. If you open your arms to the Lord, He can pick up your hands and make you walk. But if you always look towards material arrangements, the Lord, and you won't lift your arms up in the sky, you will put your arms into the matter, and then the Lord has nothing where He can catch you. Prabhupada made it very clear what he was meaning when he said, we are working on behalf of Krishna. When there was a little confrontation in the temple, the devotees realized, my God, we have to build the temple. We had made a temporary shed. A shed means a little hut. And then the demon came and destroyed that. And it almost took the land back. But then Krishna intervened and took the demon. But my God, we really have to make now a lot of money that this doesn't happen and the land is secure for the deities. And they went out collecting from after the morning program, and they collected throughout the whole day and into the evening and night. Once Prabhupada, he was visiting the temple. It was 6 o'clock in the evening. And he called a devotee. He had noticed there was no one in the aarti, because there was no singing in the aarti. He had noticed that. He's extremely perceptive. When you were with Prabhupada, you really felt, he knows me. He sees everything about me, including the things which I don't see. It was really a feeling. You were electrified in his presence, but you were also very, very careful. Very careful. Because he would just see something. You would see by his eyes, oops, he has seen something. What has he seen? What is he looking at? Oh, my God, my dhoti is so dirty. Oh, I didn't see all the oil on my dhoti. So anyways, so Prabhupada asked, where are the devotees? They're not in the arti. The devotee said, Prabhupada, they're collecting. At this time, they're collecting 6 o'clock. And then he said his famous sentence, it is by Krishna's pleasure and mercy that we achieve success. Chant and dance before him for his pleasure. That will please him. And then the Lord will reciprocate with you. That is what he meant. I myself was corrected very intensely by Prabhupada, because, believe it or not, I also worked to make money. Yes, I was a gardener. My company was called Paradise Now. In other words, hire me and your garden is a paradise. Paradise Now, a very lucrative gardening firm. Yes. I come from a family who knows how to make money, believe it or not. And I was making money for the temple. Paradise Now, in my young days. Yes, das Paradies. And Prabhupada and other devotees were also. One devotee was working in Langnese ice cream. But at that time they didn't have egg-free ice and we couldn't enjoy this position. Langnese ice cream was, I think Bhakti Bhushan Swami was working for Langnese ice cream. And our whole temple had different interesting jobs, you know. And then Prabhupada heard about it. And he wrote this once, he was not pleased. It was around this time. He said, I don't want my brahmanas to be dishwashers, servants of materialists. I don't want this. You must please Krishna by your activities. And that is how Sankirtan was born. Sankirtan, Prabhupada got this idea, let us print our books in big quantities, let us distribute them, and we will live very happily. He didn't want us to be pleasing Krishna. And that's his whole teaching to us. And it confronted and collided. I should give up my Paradise Now company. This is a very paradisical company. So much money is coming in there. He wants you to go on Sankirtan. What should I do? Sing and dance on the street? I thought if the people who know me come and see me singing and dancing on the street, that's too far out. And then I thought, why not? Why not sing and dance in the street? It's so good to do this. And I did. I remember I had to surrender to Prabhupada at that time. And I went singing and dancing on the street, and because I was a new devotee, I didn't know how to buy my dolly, and it was also too short. It went up to the knees. I looked extremely photogenic. in Bermuda shorts. And I sang and danced in the street, and I distributed books. And it worked. Then my friends came, saw me singing and dancing on the street. And I felt so ashamed. Then they got my German teacher, Herr Förster, who was a real left-wing intellectual. Mr. Förster thought, I can't believe you're doing this. This is how you want to change the society. I can't believe you. No, you come and dance with me. Very good method. I do remember, but I had to really fight because my own thinking was not, I was young and I had my own opinion. And Prabhupada had a different opinion, and yes, we had to surrender. And only now, when I'm old and useless, I can understand why he was doing this. He wanted us to make a paradigm shift. That is, you somehow please Krishna. Now, for the traumatized devotees, there's one is here who is severely traumatized, but not the other, not so many. But I need to address everyone in my audience. I agree, this concept of trying to please Krishna and move to the side of the light was in the early days, we were very revolutionary in the early days, or very, let me say, we did not always think very deeply about the psychophysical nature of all of our members. And therefore, we sometimes gave tips which were not appropriate at the time. And it gives me very much pain that I was part of this thinking in the old times. Because I understand, I heard devotees. But that was not good. This was a mistake. But the big thing is not a mistake. That is to learn the principle in life that somehow you are trying to arrange your life in such a way that you give pleasure to Krishna. You must do it in a way as is appropriate for you. The Lord speaks about this in the 11th canto. Surrender, you cannot imitate the verb surrender, which is, means one thing for one person and another thing for another person. You must do it as is your adhika. Adhika is a Sanskrit word which means the level on which you presently are. That we didn't know this verse, or we didn't know this point. But now we know. You must apply this principle in your life. Come towards the light in your life. More and more move away from the concept of arranging your life on your own. Put your life into the hands of the Lord and you will see miracles. I began to understand this from my Bakka. My Bakka, the Moi Bakka, yes. Bakka means Großmutter, Großmama, what is it? Grossi in German. How do you say it in English? Grandmama. Grandmama. Only before, a few days before her death, I asked her, how is it to die? Always are so cute. I'm very curious, those who know me. I sometimes wish I wouldn't be so curious. How is it to die, grandmama? She looked at me. It's not different from living, she said. When I'm living, I'm in the right hand of the Lord. When I'm dying, I'm in the left hand of God. I have given my life to the Lord. It doesn't mean that she didn't take medication, and she had her arrangement when she would fall down, something would make beep 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 and signal it to some people who would come with a car and help her, rush her to the hospital and so on. No, she used her intelligence. She was a very intelligent elderly lady, but she had placed her life in the hands of the Lord, because only there we will find shelter, only there our heart will find satisfaction, only there our lives will feel sheltered. When there is a difficult situation in your life, learn to pray, learn to give it in the hands of the Lord. And you will see miracles in heaven. Why do you worry so much? The Lord is behind everything. Not even a blade of grass will be able to move behind. That doesn't mean that you should try to address the problem on the level of your intelligence and resources, but you should ultimately make yourself dependent on Krishna. And you should arrange your life in such a way that there's ample opportunity to please Him. You should just think, what will make the Lord happy now? Now you're in the temple. What will make the Lord happy when you are in the temple? You should think like this. Maybe I should serve devotees. Maybe I should come to the programs. Now in the temple. Well, yes, yes, I think this would work. Or I should help you. You should just always ask the question. When you are with the Kalis, or when you sit in the cinema, what will make the Lord happy? You can chant when it's boring. You know, what will make the Lord happy? I'm giving you a very modern example. I'm not saying I have to say this for my eternal critics. I'm not recommending the devotees to go to the cinema. If you heard that, you misheard it. I'm just saying, in whatever situation you find yourself, see how you can please the Lord. The Lord is not narrow. He is everywhere. Please, in all situations, utilize everything with this service. Now I know some will not be able to forget this example. Please, I didn't want this. The example is not good. I made a mistake here. I should have said, when you are like you always are in high levels of Krishna consciousness, then add this thought. But then it's unnecessary to add this thought because you're already thinking like this. When you go through what you go through, let me say, ask yourself the question how you can please the Lord. And you will find a way how you can please the Lord, because the Lord is in every situation in life. That is our goal. We are devotees. We are clearly on the side of light. We are not good devotees, at least I am not, but we are trying. We have this as a goal, to please the Lord in all situations. We want to please the Lord. However the Lord wants it, that is bhakti. We want to learn this more and more. We want to find out what is the plan, what pleases our Lord. And we want to do this. By the way, I can tell you, he likes this devotee sing and dance. I do remember this. The last time when I saw Prabhupada was in London. And it was his Vyasa Puja day. And he looked very emaciated. It was only, I think, maybe a month before he would leave. Or 2 months. When did Prabhupada leave? November or October?
November.
So it was somewhere in Vyasa Puja is from
October.
So the changes can be. Yeah, it was on three more months he was with us. He looked already, the signs of his departure were upon him. You could see it very clearly. So we were in the kirtan, we were all very sad because. Yeah, he didn't look well physically. And Prabhupada looked at us, and his eyes said, "Why do you look so sad? Didn't I? Is this what I taught you?" Mm-hmm. And he made like this. He wanted us to dance. In such a situation, he wanted us to dance. Okay, if he wants us to dance, we shall dance. And only minutes later, everyone jumped to the ceiling because that was what pleased him in this situation. This was what pleased Krishna in this situation. And we did it. We were there. We wanted to please him. That was now our purpose in life. And my dear devotees, the moment you get this in your mind, I want to please Krishna in whatever situation I find myself. Brahmachari, grihastha, doesn't matter. Rich or poor, doesn't matter. Facilities or no facilities, doesn't matter. I want to please Krishna in whatever way he wants us. You are entering the path of bhakti. And as you enter that beautiful path of bhakti, and you have this as your motive in your life, you are entering an extremely powerful area, a protected area where Krishna looks over his devotees. If you don't enter this path and enter into the world and run away from this inner mentality to please Krishna, you are on your own. You are relying on your Purushakara, the strengths, your karmic strengths, and you will move in your karmic circle. You will not move even 1 millimeter outside the karmic arrangements in this life for you. So let us add as much light as we can at our present state to move forward in this way, on this path of pleasing Krishna, acting for his pleasure. Anu Puryena Krishna, we act to make Krishna happy. And you will see miracles. If you forget everything you heard in this lecture, which is possible because there were so many informations, just this one information, to just make a point, wherever you are, to try to act for the pleasure of Krishna. You will enter a path, and as you enter this path, you will find all of a sudden a pulling force in your life, acting upon you. It's the Karshana Shakti of Krishna, which forcibly drags you back home, back to Godhead, no matter where you stand on this path. You will find all of a sudden energy moving you forward, and you know, oh my God, this was not my arrangement. I didn't do this. If I'm very honest, this good thing has happened in my life, but I could not have made this happen. I'm very limited. I know how limited I am. You will see more and more of this power working, and you will be surprised. My God. I try to arrange a program, and then all 300 people came. The Lord has sent them. He has helped me. You will actually see these things happening more and more in your life. I tried to do this service for Krishna. I am very incapable to do it. But all of a sudden, this happened. I always had a little complex in my life. I ran away from school when I was 16 because it was just too boring. I was not very Krishna conscious. It was just intolerably boring for me. I would just suffer, and all the teachers would see it. He looked so dejected and so absolutely finished. We must save him. Maybe we should talk more interesting things. And then, what would make you interesting to learn? They were asking me. Get the Rolling Stones at the school. Concept. And they actually tried not the Rolling Stones, but some music and so on, because they saw I was suffering. They were good people. But at the end, I just said, I can't take it any longer. And I ran away from school, but I never learned systematically in my life, and I was always having a little minority complex. I want to explain things, but I am not trained to explain it properly because I lack the schooling, the concentration, and all these things. And then I noticed something. I would be invited to universities to talk. And sometimes professors came to me and said, my God, are you a good teacher? Where did you learn? And my false ego was very much delighted. But then I understood, I didn't learn anything. I'm a fool. Ran away from school. But Krishna, because I want to preach, Krishna somehow helps. It's the Daivi Prakriti, the divine energy. It works, in other words, what Prabhupada said. And I really want to encourage all of you. You are great souls. You are much more intelligent than you have so much, Just try to add this into your life. This conscious question, what will please Krishna in this situation? And you will see. First, it's a little bit more light into your life, and because your life may be still a little gray in the gray zone, I don't know. Maybe some of you are already pure devotees and it's only light. But I'm talking now to the people like me, the gray zone people, who are not materialists and who are not yet pure devotees. There are different shades of material contaminations working, therefore our life is a little in the gray zone. If you add this thought, I want to please Krishna. You come with us. This. And for me, in the Varaha Leela, this is the deciding question. There's the ancient struggle between the Lord and his devotees on one side, and the people who have made the decision to turn away from the Lord, to have nothing to do with him, to reject him, and their people, you know. And this is that. And then there's a lot of greed, innocent people, misguided people, and so on. And I think we were in the misguided section of humanity. Now we need to go more and more the path of bhakti. You will learn the hidden secrets of bhakti. You will hear about this. This evening we will start, and you will be surprised. In the beginning, you might say, oh yeah, I've heard things like this, but then you will hear something which will revolutionize the your understanding of Krishna consciousness. You will see. You will see. Please test me very clearly. See, anyways, I don't want to give away my plus one idea from the lecture. So this was the lecture. I hope it had some point for you. Maybe we blessed by Lord Varaha, may some of the water from this come on, mercy, and may we become uplifted by his Udharana Shakti, his Shakti by which he uplifts fallen objects and fallen people. It's called this Patita Udharana. And may we do our part, that is, rely more on the Daivi Prakriti than on Purushakara. This is what makes the devotee. The Gita, Lord Krishna speaks about his devotees. He says they are great souls, Mahatmanas, Tumampaka. Then he says why he considers them great souls. Because they even Prakritim, Ashrita. You remember the shloka? Of course you do. They take shelter under the divine energy of the Lord. They really make a conscious effort. It's like yesterday we walked in the rain and we took shelter under umbrellas. We made a conscious endeavor to get these foolish things out and put them over us. So devotees are taking shelter every day under the umbrella-like lotus feet of Krishna. And what that means for us, or what that could mean for us, is really a hidden secret, which we hope to address this evening. Lord Varahadeva ki
jai,
Patita Udarana Varahadeva ki
jai,
Pajita Bhavana Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki
jai.
Shri Nityananda Rama ki
jai.
Go Premanandi
Hare Krishna.
Swami Sachinandana Swami ki
jai. So any questions you have? Yes, please.
I wanted to ask, because you said we always need to see what is good to please Krishna. So sometimes, because we are devotees and we have this intonation that we like to do devotional things, How, can you please make an elaborate how to be responsible for some also material things? Like, because usually it comes to me, you know, like, oh, I really like to please Krishna, I would like to go to temple, go to India all the time, and this and that. But that, does it really please Krishna? How to be responsible also for spiritual material? What, where is the limit?
Please go more to India. And not India, in the heaven. Very easy. In our service we have areas of responsibility, and then it would be responsible if our service calls for us to go to Vrindavan or Mayapur. I'm in the situation. Everyone wants me to go to the Kirtan Mela, and I'm getting letters from CBC members and everything. Not letters, but they threaten that they will kidnap me. But it would not be responsible at this stage of the Vedic way, which is a service which needs to be developed and, if possible, finished in this year. That's my desire, at least. So the responsibility for this is in the service for Krishna, which you please Krishna, or responsibility towards you when you are a family person. You are not, but those of us who are, or those of you who are family people, because you have a responsibility towards the children, for instance. I know some of the devotees would like to go with their children to Vrindavan, but there's one couple of devotees, very excellent devotees, who wanted so much, but the child needed to first grow, otherwise it would have been irresponsible. They can become ill, the children in Vrindavan. So this Jesus Krishna. Vibhamurti, there is a very nice secret in Krishna consciousness. There are two types of devotees, Anukaran and Anusharan. Anukaran means someone who follows devotees, but he is not yet understanding the essence. To put it in very simple language, he's imitating. And then there is the Anusharan devotee. Now, the devotee, the difference between these the substantial devotee and the one who is still immature and therefore only imitates, is that the substantial devotee takes responsibility, whereas the unsubstantial devotee, or let me say the growing devotee, let us give a polite term for him, is not taking responsibility. You can see that when someone comes into the temple, when it's dirty, one devotee will say, "It's dirty, I must clean it." And the other will not even notice that it's dirty, because for him, he's not having accepted the responsibility to really serve in the temple for the pleasure of the Lord. He comes to meet his friends and so on. He has not seen this. I'm going now to the temple. This is the house of God. In this house, the eyes of the Lord are on me. I must now keep my Lord's house like this. So the responsibility, it's a big problem in our movement, that the devotees are not taking responsibility. They don't think it's not my job. It's the authorities' job to take care of this. Or it's someone else's job, not mine. They should serve my interest. I'm here for this. That's a problem. That is a problem. Then you cannot be strong as a movement. Then the devotees don't take responsibility. So that marks the difference. When you can see in your life and you feel, "Oh my God, this needs to be taken care of, but there's no manpower. But I'm here. I mean, I I should take care of it. When this feeling comes in your heart, you know you're coming, some paradigm shift starts in your life, where you become a real devotee, or let us say substantial devotee, and where you leave the area where you're just making yourself acquainted with the culture and tradition and the philosophy. It's something you will see. It's a certain move. Oh yeah. There are people who don't know about spiritual life and who are wasting their life out there. Maybe I should do something to help. You know, I'm not dead yet. I can do it. Now, obviously, if you don't have time to clean, if you have another appointment, all you have to move within a frame of practice, of references in your life, in a contextual frame. In which context do you move at the present moment? No, but I'm speaking now about principles which need to be applied. Taking responsibility is a principle which you have to apply in the context of your life. Maybe you have already responsibilities to something else and cannot take this particular responsibility at this time. Fine, of course. But I'm talking about the principle to take on responsibility. I found out in my life, there's one thing, and that is maybe the only good thing in me, if there is anything good in me. I found out my spiritual development is my responsibility. I have to do it. When it comes to chanting, I have to make sure that I'm there. It's not anyone else's responsibility. It's not even Prabhupada's responsibility. That much. He has taken a responsibility for his disciples to bring them God back to Godhead if they follow this order. So I have to follow this path. It's my responsibility. And when I notice that, oh my God, my spiritual life is my responsibility. I'm not really very good at taking responsibility. And oh my God, my hippie background is ruling me in this. One doesn't want to take responsibility for anything. It's old fashioned to take responsibility. That's the philosophy. It belongs to another era. This is a modern era. But then I found out this. It's very nice. Get yourself a service which fits for your the way you are at the present moment, and then take full responsibility for that service. Maybe you don't have one. Maybe your service is not the service of someone else, I mean, for sure. But there must be some service. It must be, even if it is a service which has a very relatively small time frame. In other words, you only have 1 hour a day, or half an hour a day, or 10 minutes a day to do service. But whatever it is, take that and take responsibility, and you will. I have to make sure it works for me. This is, and then you move into this area of functioning to give pleasure to Krishna. You move in this area. Because if you want to give pleasure to Krishna, you have to make sure you do that and take responsibility for it. But a pilgrimage to India, you know, if your service allows, is not irresponsible, it is very necessary to recharge the batteries. Our process of we have five processes of devotional service, and one is going to the dump, chanting with another, reading the Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, like that. But of course, we should go responsible. When we go to the holy dharma, my dear devotees, here's the secret. Do service. It's not about tourism, it's about doing more service than Krishna. That's how you go to the dharma. Yes, in our Western culture, we go to other places out of tourism. That's not about that. Pilgrimage is something that's not a tourist. I want to see this. I would like to be there. Let me look at this place. Let me make a photo and show I was also there. See, I'm next to the deity. You got it completely wrong. This is not the idea of pilgrimage. More service. In our temple also it's not allowed to make photographs because so many Indians came and they wanted to be photographed next to the deities, you know. It was like really the temple was becoming a kulissa. How do we say kulissa in English? Is that a word? When you go to the photo,
background.
Photo shop, there's like a background, but it's called kulissa or something?
Yes.
Like in Russia, there's a coffee shop and you get out of paper and you just stand next to them and get a photo. So all the deity waters came and the deities and everything just became a backdrop. A backdrop, maybe. And then we had that, no photographs allowed in the temple. Stop. And you know what? 80% of those who took photos were Hare Krishna devotees. It's us who had a collection.
Thank you for saying the truth.
Not the truth. What is the time now?
Five
to the hour. I'm sorry, I'm keeping